everybody. My name is Fred Wilson. I'm going to be hearings officer for today's public hearing. This is the time set aside for the Fearless Brewing home occupation file. The case number is Z0346-20-HOEX. And I apologize to people who are just tuning in. I am on the way back from vacation, so I'm on the road. Please bear with me on that. And before we turn to my general introduction about how the hearings go in general, Ms. Gonzalez is going to give a little introduction on how everyone will participate by Zoom and how this works with the Zoom platform. So to you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Okay. It's a little lengthy, so bear with me on this. So Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic. So the public hearing will be conducted virtually using Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearings, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator. That would be Darcy. Audience members' videos will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website later today. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for open testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is when the time is. If you want to provide testimony, you will utilize the raise hand feature. Attendees on the PC and iPads, you have a raise hand button on the Zoom bar, top or bottom, depending on device. I believe it's also available on the participants. If they have access to the participants, you can scroll down and find your name and you can raise your hand. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a little while. Primarily, you will see the participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it's your time to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. Once you have recorded your testimony, your mic will be muted and your screen will be returned to normal. If the record is left open at the end of the hearing and you wish to submit additional written testimony, email your written testimony to lorraineGo@clackamas.us. And that's spelled LORRAINEGO at clackamas.us. Or mail it to the county, Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division at 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City, Oregon, 97045. The staff contact email address is also available on the webpage where you found the Zoom link for today's hearing. Testimony must be received by 4 p.m. on the day the record closes. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer's written decision. If you do not wish to testify but would like to receive the decision, you must provide your email or standard mailing address. You have two options, one by email to the staff contact for the application or by entering it in the Zoom chat function during the hearing. That's where you can insert your address. That concludes the directions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. So today is the public hearing, so it's the opportunity for people to provide testimony, to discuss evidence, to make legal arguments. I won't make a final decision today. There'll be a later written decision that comes out after the record's been closed. There are a few things I have to talk about before every public hearing. I need to disclose that I've had any ex-party contacts. That's any discussions about the merits of the case before today. I haven't. The only thing I know about this case is what I've received from the planning department that's in the planning file and in the staff report. I also need to disclose whether I'm biased, whether I'm for or against the application for any reason other than the merits of the case, and I'm not. I'm not familiar with the parties or the property. I don't have any reason to feel one way or the other. Finally, I need to disclose whether I have any conflicts of interest. Again, I don't. I'm in private practice in Salem. I don't have any clients in Clackamas County, let alone anywhere near the subject property, and I don't own property or have family that owns property in Clackamas County. If you haven't been to one of these hearings before, the way it'll work is we will start with a staff report from Ms. Gonzalez. After that, the applicant will have an opportunity to present their case. After that, if there's anybody who wants to testify in favor of the application, they can testify. After that, there's an opportunity for anybody who's opposed to the application to testify. Then Ms. Gonzalez will have a chance to respond to any issues that may have come up. And finally, the applicant has an opportunity for final rebuttal since they have the burden of proof. A few other things I'm required to talk about by state statute and county ordinance. If you do testify, please give us your name and address so we have that for the record. Also, please direct your testimony to the approval criteria. They are the home occupation approval criteria. They're listed in the staff report. Those are the only things I can make my decision based upon. So even if there's something that is a wonderful point, but if it doesn't have anything to do with the approval criteria, I just can't consider it. Also, make sure you raise all the issues that you do have regarding those approval criteria, because if you don't, under state law, you may not be able to raise those issues in the future if there are any further proceedings or appeals of this case. Also, the applicant, there are a number of proposed conditions of approval. If you have any issues or concerns with those, make sure you raise those issues. If you think they're unconstitutional takings or any other things like that, if you don't raise those issues, you may be precluded from raising them in the future. I think with that, we can turn to the staff report.
Okay. And then, Darcy, do you prompt my share screen?
You should be able to just share your screen.
There we go. Thank you. Oh, okay. Oh, great. I have no idea what this one is, so let's see. Okay. And then can you see my screen now?
No, not yet. Mm-hmm. At least I can't.
Okay, well, let's see.
Black, yes.
No, I'm hitting buttons and things aren't showing up on my share screen. There it is. Thank you. All right. So, as mentioned, this is the home occupation.
We still can't see it, Lorraine.
You still can't?
No.
It says we're seeing your screen, but we don't really see anything.
It's blank.
Okay. So how do I get back to you?
Okay, I'm going to kick you out of sharing for a second.
Okay.
Okay, now try the Alt-F buttons.
Alt-F, okay.
Alt-S, S, as in Steve.
So I have a map, so... What substitute Alt in the Mac?
On a Mac?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Let me try the share screen again. See if that's going to be helpful. And it throws me in. Throws me into all these blank screens. Desktop, I want my phone. So, Darcy, I emailed you my PowerPoint in the event something happened, such as this.
Okay. All right, let me kick you off for a second then. Lorraine, I do not have your PowerPoint.
If we can't get the PowerPoint, then I suppose we could just do it. You could just give you an oral presentation.
Okay. I'm looking for it in the file here.
In the S drive?
Yes. So, stay tuned.
There we go. Thank you. Darcy can never quit. That's all there is to it.
Lorraine, you're my job security.
Sorry.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and mute myself. Just let me know when you want me to move it to the next slide.
Okay. All right, so today we have the home occupation. It is an exception hearing. And it's case file Z03646-20. Next slide, please. The proposal is to use an existing 40 by 70. It's 280,000 square feet. Pole barn as a warehouse for storage of empty cans, inventory, and the storage of one vehicle of not more than 14,500 pounds gross vehicle weight in relation, it's all in relation to Fearless Brewing Company, which is located in Estacada. The request that is made for an exception application is to the size of the structure, and we'll get further into this as we go along in the application. The exception criteria was addressed according to subsection 822.05 of the county ordinance. And it does, the exception for the 822.05, the one in particular that we need to address outside of the typical level 3 major home occupation criteria is 822.05AC2, not to exceed 3,000 square feet of a detached accessory structure. Next slide, please. Okay, so where this property sits is on the lower portion of the screen. It is part of the Twin Island Park subdivision. It has access from Crest Drive, and where we have, I'm going to bring this up, is the access to the site itself. It would be lot 2800, which is lot 94 of the Twin Island Park development. It's 94, 93, 81, and 82. Also, that was included in the application was tax lot 2700, which is the frontage to the Clackamas River. However, there is no development being proposed on 2800. And actually, none of the use is going to be on 2800. It is all going to be focused, none of the use is going to be on 2700. It's all going to be focused on tax lot 2800 with a pre-existing development. Next slide, please. This provides, I hope some of you can see it better than I, but it shows the environmental overlays of this property. On the right side, you'll be seeing, without the aerial photo, you'll be seeing the topography lines that are etched in green. And those show the topography features of it, and it illustrates that 2700, which fronts Clackamas River, has the steepest topography on it. And then the flat portion of 2800 at that northeast corner, that is flat, and that's basically where all the development occurs. In the aerial photo, there's a portion of it that is not in the aerial. It's just our maps didn't include it. That development, you see where the development is at that northeast corner there. And then you'll see where Crest Drive extends over to the property itself. Next slide. This slide is basically just to show you the environmental conditions of the area, the character of the area. Highly timbered, rural areas. It's in the rural residential farm forest district. Parcels that are included as part of the Twin Islands development. That is also within the rural residential farm forest. Next slide, please. This is the site plan that the applicant submitted in. So it shows where the structures are located on the property. The upper northeast corner, that's where the structure in question is located, the 2,800 square foot structure. The house is indicated over to the west, the lower west, and it's a 1960 house. And then right next to it is a detached garage. So this is the focus area where the activity will occur in the 70 by 40 accessory structure. Parking will occur in that general area between the garage and the existing structure. Next slide. Logistics of the site. As I mentioned, we're really going to be focusing on 2800 for this particular development or proposed use. Development's already pre-existing. The zoning is rural residential farm forest. It's approximately half an acre for tax lot 2700, which is the vacant lot that we will not be addressing as part of this home occupation use. Tax lot 2800, where the development occurs and where the flattest portion of the parcel is, that's 1.71 acres. The overlays, you have a 100-year floodplain area, which is predominantly over on 2700, and then the 500-year. The 500-year is not regulated, but the 100-year is. When looking at this development that's proposed, or actually the use that's proposed, the development already exists, so we didn't have to really require a floodplain application because that's only triggered when development occurs. The building permits, I just indicated what the building permits were for the 40 by 70 foot structure. It was permitted in 2013 under building permit B0014013. It was finaled for final inspection in September of 2013. As I mentioned, no development on tax lot 2700. An important part feature of this development is an easement agreement. The easement agreement that takes access to the site for the residents and for the proposed home occupation use, it was a vacated roadway which has been utilized today by primarily two parcels. The parcel owners are the Palmers and the Johnsons. Next slide, please. I want to focus in on the key requirements of the easement agreement, and the purpose for that is because the travel to and from the property is very much dependent on this easement agreement. So the key factors of this is that they're limited by legal agreement of the parties, because there was mediation involved with the development of this easement agreement. They agreed to only one commercial vehicle that is 14,500 gross vehicle weight or less. And it is specifically the box truck that is currently engaged in the home occupation activity. But as the easement agreement further defines, it could be a substitute one, but it can be no more than one on the site. The specifics of that box truck is identified on the bullets here. Travel time. no more than 6 one-way trips, 3 round trips on the easement per day that's associated with the business. Only once a month are they allowed to have 10 one-way trips, translation, 5 round trips on the easement area with a company box truck or a replacement truck. This does not apply to the non-commercial vehicles for the domestic purposes, for farming purposes. It's not included as part of this agreement here. Speed limit, and it doesn't really differentiate on the speed limit whether that is for all parties or just the home occupation. So staff's perspective is it's all parties. No more than 10 miles per hour travel time on the travel speed on the easement. Easement shall be made substantially in the current condition and shall be, the applicant shall be responsible, the Johnsons, shall be responsible and bear the initial cost of widening the gravel portion of the easement area described in Section 1 of the easement agreement. So those are very specific requirements that are outside of our typical review process for the home occupations, but it was... they went through code enforcement, and so it was very clear that this needed to be included in the conditions of approval and making sure that the home occupation use is binding to this agreement. Next slide, please. Notification for the land use application. It went to 25 property owners, including the CPO and the county divisions, agencies. So Estacada Fire Department was notified. They didn't have much to comment on, so that was basically their comment. No comment at this time. County Soils Division, if any of the employees on the property take use of restroom facilities on site, then they're going to be required to go through an authorization notice to identify that the septic system can accommodate the extra use. Building Code Department is basically, they'll have a change of use permit requirement, which means that the use is changing from domestic farm use as it was permitted under the building permit I previously stated, and the change is going to be to commercial use because the entire structure is proposed for commercial use. And even if a portion of it was proposed for commercial use, the entire structure has to be upgraded to the new classification of S1. Engineering Department, they had 3 specific conditions. I really paraphrase considerably here, but I do have all the agency's responses included in the exhibit folder. But basically, a development permit, they need to talk to the engineering department to determine if a development permit is required. They need to submit plans for any proposed improvements and also maintain the intersection for site visibility on the intersecting points. Next slide, please. Oh, I thought I changed this. So this is very difficult to see, and I apologize. I thought I changed this over. The level 3 home occupation criteria, basically you're looking at who the operator is, how many employees, noise, vibration, fumes, electrical interference, storage and display, signs, parking. And then in the next section there, it's a continuation of the level 3 criteria, the access types of uses for the building. It has to be compatible. This is in the rural residential farm forest. So even though this isn't applicable, the use is, I mean, it still follows that same guidelines. It's a rural use type of structure. It was approved as a pole barn for agricultural farm uses, domestic uses, and the structure itself will stay the same except for the upgrades of the change of use permit through the building department. Hazardous equipment, it refers to location for a level 3, building footage, square footage, traffic, vehicles, and then also prohibited uses. So the operators are going to be the Johnsons, the husband and wife, that's Bennett and Kenneth. They are the operators of it. They will have 2 additional employees. So in all, we count the Johnsons as well as the 2 additional employees. So you have 4 employees. That is consistent with the criteria, which allows a maximum of 5. Noise, the activity that will be engaged is there's a forklift that they move some of the containers to and from the truck to the storage area, vibration and glare. I also thought I corrected that too. I do know how to spell glare, but I just... Anyway, so vibration, glares, and fumes. Basically, there's really no evidence to substantiate that glare and fumes would be a product of storage of containers and equipment associated with a brewery company. The electrical interference, again, the storage of the said materials doesn't seem to... There's no evidence that it would cause some issues. Storage and display, they don't propose to have outdoor storage. It's all going to be indoors. The signage, there's no signage proposed. The parking, as I mentioned, is proposed between the 40 by 70 structure and the garage, so in that vicinity. I'm going to go back to noise. Noise, typically conversation level, that's about 60 decibels. Yelling, shouting out commands, or employees out loading, unloading, loud voices, that can register up to 90 decibels. And this is all, I believe I have that in the findings there, but this is all based on research through the noise decibel levels that are typical for said activities. So that's a way of saying, included in the staff report, is be aware and keep those levels at that 60 decibels, if not less. Access, the proposal for the access is the easement agreement we talked about. And the parties, I don't see reason to find, there are no findings to say that they can't meet it, being that they invested the time, the finances, the commitment to sit down with the Palmers in order to script up this easement agreement, sign it, record it. It's a legal document, so they went through the effort. So it's staff's finding is that, yes, it's feasible for them to comply with the access, their agreement, and all parties signed, the Palmers and the Johnson signed the agreement. Hazardous materials, there was something on the hazardous materials, and the Johnsons can probably later provide some input on this. It was stated there was caustic material that was stored. I hope I got that word right. But a little more definition, description on that would be helpful. Is this associated with the brewing activities, et cetera? How do you dispose of it? It'll be something that you would want to talk to DEQ, contact DEQ. They have a guideline booklet that you can access. The likelihood of permits is something that they'll address. Doesn't seem like it would be, but that's for them to say. Location, they are surrounded predominantly by parcels that are 2 acres and greater, so they qualify for the level 3 criteria. The traffic, they mentioned that they could comply with the 30 trips per day, which translates to 15 round trips. And then the prohibited uses, there's nothing that they stated that is of a prohibited use that they propose. Next slide, please. So the exception criteria. Basically on this, the compatibility. You want to show that you have compatibility with the use. The use was pre-existing as a storage for various things associated with farming for domestic uses. The structure itself is not going to change. The use inside is, again, storage. It's all going to be indoors. So the findings by staff was that, yes, it would be compatible. Character of the area didn't seem to be something that would be disrupted, only because everything was going to be indoors. The agreement that the activity for transportation to and from the site is fairly limited, more limited than what the criteria for the level 3 home occupation, trips per day and We don't apply anything for the miles per hour. So it's more restrictive through the agreement than it is for the home occupation criteria. Mitigation impacts by driveway and roadway improvements. Again, that was already addressed through the easement agreement. The road pretty much stays the same. Any improvements will be follow through with the engineering department for them to ensure that you don't need a development permit to widen the road. If you do need a permit, you'll be acquiring it through them. And there's conditions in the conditions of approval that further state that. Potential environmental impacts with air and water. There wasn't evidence to state that that would be an issue with this storage of equipment. Under subsection 822.05, address the services, public facilities, surface water, sewer, and improvements. I basically kind of addressed it up front. In the roadway, the condition, excuse me, to contact the engineering department to see if you do need a permit to follow up with the site plan requirements, and also for ensuring that your visual clearance at those intersecting points are maintained throughout the life of the property as well as the use. Surface water, there wasn't any conditions the engineering department made regarding the surface water. Because the structure already exists, additional surface water, being that the area is already developed, is not something that is of a concern by the engineering department to instill some conditions. Public water, it's a well, so public water is not something that we had to review on this. And the water use is not something that's proposed as part of this development. So where it really falls under as the exception is subsection 822.05C. We already discussed the access and the easement agreement, and that's compatible with the use, and the site is not within the agricultural EFU or timber district, so it's not maintained by those for service or uses of those districts, so it really wasn't applicable. The structure itself, the applicant has a 40 by 70 foot pole barn structure. They, instead of trying to separate the wall, putting a 7 foot wall to separate 1,500 square feet from the remaining structure, they opted to just to use the entire structure for the business. And that's where the condition for the exception is. It's something that it's feasible for them to meet. There doesn't seem to be anything beyond that. So it's something that staff finds they can meet that criteria. They're not in the EFU timber or agricultural district, so that one doesn't apply. Nevertheless, they're still limited to 4 employees. Next slide. Staff did not include the conditions of approval. However, they are in the application. Staff recommends approval based on the conditions of approval and consistent compliance with the conditions of approval throughout the life of the project. With that, staff provides those recommendation, and if there are any questions.
No, thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. I don't have any questions right now. Ms. Johnson, now is the opportunity for you to present your case.
Okay. We don't really have an operation out here. We just store materials, and mostly those materials are empty kegs that we put beer in and empty cans pre-fill. That we what we call pre-fill cans, so they're empty cans, and then the caustic that we had mentioned, what that is a cleaning solution. So it'll never be disposed of on site here. It is, we just have like an extra 50 gallon drum of it that when we use the one down at the brewery, when it's empty, we transport this one down to the brewery and use it. And then we backfill with we buy a new one to go into that building. And so it's very quiet because really what all that happens out here is that once a week, just about regularly, what happens is once a week we transport, we take the truck down to the brewery, we load the truck with beer, we take it to our distributor, and we pick up some grain. We bring that grain back here, we put it into the building, and then we park the truck. The other time that we may use the truck during the week is if they need empty cans or they need additional kegs or if they need that grain, and then we'll forklift that into the truck. In our easement agreement, there is a stipulation about what hours we can perform those activities. And so most of the time, 99% of the time, that building is just storing materials that are associated with our brewing activity.
Dark and quiet.
Dark and quiet, yeah.
Okay, thanks. It sounds like you've got a lot of things worked out with the Palmer, so that sounds like it's all taken care of. Ms. Gonzalez?
No, yeah, the easement part of it is worked out with the Palmers. I doubt that the relationship with the Palmers is ever going to be entirely worked out, so.
I won't address that in my decision, just
okay.
Just the whole occupation.
Fair enough.
but there are, Ms. Gonzalez referenced a number of conditions of approval. You've had a chance to review those and you don't have any issues with any of those. Is that correct?
There was one thing that was in the, I don't know whether or not it's an issue or not. There was one, I can't remember which slide it was. Sorry about that. Where it was addressing the non-commercial vehicles, and it actually states that the non-commercial vehicles are subject to the restrictions, and what Lorraine Gonzalez said is that they're not subject to those restrictions, and that's our understanding per the easement as well. So that was about the only thing.
Okay.
I'm going to ask questions later on about the development permit and the engineering that you mentioned. So I'm not entirely sure what the next step is in that. So I can, but I'm sure that I'll have time to ask that question later.
Okay. Are we talking about later today or just later on during the process?
Later today.
Okay. Well, if you want to ask them now, this might
okay.
be a good time to do it.
All right. So you said that if there's further development, I may need a permit. Or if the engineering department determined that I needed a development permit, could you elaborate a little bit more on that and tell me who I need to talk to?
If you have to do any improvements to the roadway, the access agreement.
Okay.
Widening, resurfacing, anything of that nature, a permit may be required by the engineering department in conformance with the road standards.
And Johnny, is it Gish?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does he work for the engineering department?
He would be your contact, actually.
Okay. So he's been out here. He did require us to make, we got a permit. He required that we do a 12-foot wide, 20-foot long, kind of an apron that went into Crest Drive. Crest Drive is paved.
Driveway access.
Yeah, driveway access. And that work has been completed, and that permit, I believe, is closed out. So that was the only thing. He came out here. He looked around. He said the only thing that he could see that might be, and he said it wasn't an issue. He said we may have to show where we're providing parking. So an employee drives out here, parks a vehicle, gets in our truck, goes down to the brewery. And so... We would be required. We have plenty of room for parking, and he even said that. So I don't think that from his standpoint, there was anything else that we needed to do. So I don't know if I'm supposed to confirm that or
You could actually revise your site plan just to illustrate the parking.
I did. It is on there.
Okay. So as long as it's on there, that's all
yeah.
I
need. Yep. Okay.
About it. It would be beneficial just to touch point with Johnny again to make sure that you have everything and there isn't anything in addition.
Okay.
And then that would pretty much close the book on that one.
Okay. I think we're all good to go.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, yes.
I neglected to mention one email that came in last night. Mm-hmm. I had two responses to the application, one in support, a neighbor, and then the second one was the Twin Islands Community Association, which is the development that the Johnsons are part of. They were in opposition as a community association, which we can't oversee that part of it. But their point of concern was road improvements. So we've experienced with heavy trucks destroying speed bumps and causing muddy ruts in the road. So they're concerned about that and making sure that the road system is addressed. I'm just going to quote something here. Unlike Mr. Johnson's street, our roads are gravel and already suffer extensive damage from delivery trucks and other vehicles. And on the assessor's map that I had pulled up, the primary development for the Twin Island is to the west of the site, with the Palmers taking access along with the Johnsons to that extension of Crest Drive that feeds into the property. But that is a brand new comment that came in that I thought I should bring up. I will include it as part of the exhibit. I have it down as Exhibit 12. Exhibit 11 also came in on the 7th, and that was from a Mike and Sarah Keel that were in support of the home occupation.
So I'm clear. The Twin Islands subdivision, their roads are to the west of the Miss Johnson's property, but she's taking access from the east, so she would not be using the roads that the Twin Islands are concerned about, right?
Right, and I believe Mrs. Johnson was going to provide some background on that.
Sure. Okay, so I think the confusion that probably happened with them is there's a Twin Island Neighborhood Association, and then there is the official development that was that our property was the original property, and then the Twin Island area was developed. Twin Island, they're probably, I don't know, probably 100 feet or more, 150 feet below us. So our property goes down a hill, and then there's the roads that are part of Twin Island Park. So I think when you sent them the letter saying that this was part of the Twin Island plot development, I think they probably thought that included, that somehow or another their association was included in this, and that we were asking for permission to drive across their roads. We have the building that we are proposing to use here is accessed through Crest Drive and then over the private easement. And that truck never goes down to the Twin Island. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Makes sense.
So I think they were just confused by the use of Twin Island in the letter that was sent out. And because we do not have an address down there, we don't have any building down there. We don't actually, maybe once a year we drive down there just to see if our gates are still standing. So it has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you for explaining that.
Yeah. And so, if you want to go on to, I can actually show you that if you want me to, if you go back to slide number 3, but if you don't need that much detail, then I'm fine with
that. That's how I understood it before. Now you just sort of confirmed for me how it was working. So, but
okay.
Hopefully that will allay any concerns people in Twin Island development have.
Yeah.
Okay. So now would be the opportunity for, if there's anybody who are the attendees who are in favor of the application, if you missed by now, let us know. It does not look like we have anyone who wants to testify in favor. So if anybody, this is an opportunity for people who are opposed or maybe just have questions or concerns. Generally, the public hearings are opportunities to talk about the criteria and just whether or not it should be approved. But staff and Ms. Gonzalez are usually extremely helpful going above and beyond the call of duty and trying to answer any just general questions people might have about it, if that helps allay any concerns. So if you want to testify in opposition to the application, have questions, now would be the time to raise your hand. Okay.
I have
a few people, so Ms. Reinhardt will pick them.
I have three people with their hands raised. The first person to speak will be Tom. Second will be Alfred McAtee. And the third will be Ron. And remember to please state your name and your address.
All right, so we have Tom up first.
Hi, can you hear me?
There you are.
Okay.
Yes.
Hi, yeah, my name's Tom Palmer. I'm the neighbor. First of all, I'm a little bit confused because the public...
Excuse me, Mr. Palmer, I need your address, please.
Sure, it's 29092 Southeast Crest Drive, Eagle Creek, 97022.
Thank you.
So, first off, I'm in no way interfering with the issuance of this home occupancy permit. However, I'm a little confused. The notice of public hearing said this was going to be, this issue was a level 2 occupancy. This was the notice of that was sent out to everybody on September 3rd, 2020. So, is this a level 2 or a level 3 occupancy?
You can go ahead and answer, Ms. Gonzalez.
It is a level 3. It is a level 3 home occupation because that's based on the surrounding properties, the size of surrounding property. So that must have been obviously a incorrect typing.
Okay, well, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so that's where I'm confused. On our mediation, we agreed to allow the Johnsons to have a 14,500 gross vehicle weight vehicle, but we did not allow them to use a commercial vehicle greater than that weight, correct?
Correct.
They continue to do that. And they've been continuing to do that since 2013 as semi-truck, tractor trailer delivers those cans to the warehouse. What I need to clarify is that this would be strictly prohibited under this occupancy, correct?
Correct.
So from this point forward, if they have a semi-truck, a tractor trailer deliver associated with Fearless Brewery on their property, you will enforce that how?
That goes through code enforcement. And so you would be contacting the code enforcement office. I believe the same staff person who's been dealing with the previous violation will follow suit for any additional ones that come up.
Okay. Is there any way on this agreement? Because I'm looking at this third level, which I'm completely unprepared for since your public hearing notice was level 2 home occupancy or home occupation. So I'm a little bit thrown a loop here on the definition difference between the two, but our mediation agreement, I would think would be binding and carried over to your level 3, correct?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. And this could also, maybe there's not a whole lot of difference between level 2 and level 3. One of the main things is just the size of the properties that are around you. there's a little bit more. Maybe Ms. Gonzalez, you could explain what the difference for like approval criteria and what they can and can't do with those very minor differences are between level two and level three.
Certainly. So the number of trips per day is limited to 15 round trips. Your easement agreement reduces it much more than that.
Correct.
The number of vehicles on the property at a given time is 5 employees. The Johnsons don't count as employees with their vehicles unless they are specifically marked as the brewery company. It's hard to differentiate between domestic use and business use, so we don't count those. Size of the structure, 500 square feet is for level 2, 1,500 is for level 3. They're taking an exception, which allows them a maximum of 3,000. They're only taking 2,800 square feet. Trips per day, employees. Number of employees is limited to 5 for a level 3. The Johnsons are requesting 4 employees.
Okay, so I'm looking at level 3. In particular, my concern is that it states no more than one of the 5 vehicles permitted to be located on the subject property at one time shall exceed a gross vehicle weight rating of 11,000 pounds. Our mediation agreement says nothing over 14,500 pounds. And this is an open-ended, it doesn't give a max. It just says one vehicle, only one can exceed 11,000 pounds with no maximum point. My concern is that you will allow a semi-truck that's the current operation uses to deliver the beer cans and kegs or whatever to their warehouse is a semi-truck, a tractor trailer. I think those are what, 26,000 gross vehicle weight? What I want to do is, and again, I'm going to preference this, I'm in no way interfering with the issuance of this home occupancy permit, but I would like that clarified, that a semi-tractor trailer would not be allowed on my property to get to theirs.
Your easement agreement supersedes the level 3 criteria. So what that means is that it was very clear when I received the application that the easement agreement language would be embedded in the findings and the conditions of approval. And right. They are. So those are wrapped up in that decision.
So there is a condition of approval that says no vehicles over 14,500, right?
Correct. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
That is the maximum that's allowed, is the 14,500 square feet.
So as long as that condition of approval would be in the final decision, Mr. Palmer, even though another level 3 home occupation could have had one above that, since it'll be in the conditions of approval in this specific case, then they will not be able to have a semi-truck come in. And if they did, it would be in violation of the decision. You could call code enforcement and they can get involved. And, you know, if they kept doing it, they could potentially lose their home occupation permit.
Okay, so I would just like to hear from Bennett Johnson that she agrees with this, of what you were saying, that no tractor trailer, semi-truck associated with Fearless Brewery will be driving on through my property on Crest Drive to their warehouse.
So I believe that when we were in the mediation, we agreed to that. And since that mediation, which was just about a year ago, that mediation and that agreement was signed, there was one occasion where a tractor trailer showed up. They had a load for us of can lids, the little lids that go on top of 12-ounce and 16-ounce cans. That load would have fit in the back of a minivan. I actually took pictures of it. And Mr. Palmer's wife, Kathy Palmer, stopped the truck before it backed into our property. And we have mitigated that. We had no idea that they were going to send a tractor trailer to deliver a load that you could have put in the back of a minivan or a pickup truck. And so what we have done since then to mitigate that is that we have, we're prohibiting any of our suppliers to deliver anything here. So we expected them to show up with a small van to deliver that. and they showed up with a tractor trailer. So that's the only time in the past year that that has happened. And we have, as I said, mitigated that by having all deliveries go directly to the brewery, and we will truck anything back from the brewery that needs to go into this building.
Okay, thank you.
I'd just like to add that in the nearly 18 years that we have been in business, we've had loads of tractor trailers deliver here about three times, twice in that amount of time.
All right. Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Was anything else you wanted to add, Mr. Palmer? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I just wanted to get that clarified.
Okay. All right, great. Who do we have next, Ms. Renhard, Mr. McAtee?
Sorry. Next, we have Alfred McAtee.
Yes, my name is Alfred McAtee, and I'm at 29059 Southeast Woods Road, Eagle Creek, 97022. So my home is adjacent to the drive and gated area in lot 63 of the Twin Island Association. And that is, I think, referred to as tax lot 2700. My concern is that the exception includes both the lot that is targeted for this exemption, 2800, as well as the lot adjacent to my property, tax lot 2700. And I would like to ask that portion of the property be deleted from the exemption. My concern, again, the association's concern, is that traffic to that property would be detrimental to the neighborhood and the concerns that was listed from the association. Is there any reason why tax lot 27 was included in the exemption request?
I'll also let you answer that one.
Bennett?
Oh, me? I'm sorry. I believe that building is probably only on, I'm sorry, my husband's showing me something. Okay, right. I believe that the building is probably only on the 2800, but I can't guarantee that. It may be a little bit on 2700. But Mr. McAtee, we're never going to be driving that truck down in Twin Island Park. So I don't think you ever need to worry about any traffic or road conditions or anything for that matter associated with this request. I reemphasize, we're never going to drive that truck down there.
And also, even though the application might involve both tax lots, the application specifically involves the existing pole barn. So if they wanted to do it somewhere else on the property, they would have to come back and either modify or get a whole new home occupation. Right. That whole issue would come up again. So if they get approved for what they've asked for now, that would not involve any right to go do the home occupation somewhere else on tax lot 2700.
Well, that answers most of my personal concern, and that would be if in the future there was an expansion of the business perhaps, or occasion to want to use this property to drive through, that would be a concern. So I think the fact that the development on the top of the the crest property access, doesn't concern me. I don't have any concern about that.
Can I just add something? It would be impossible for us to go down that hill in a truck or anything else anyway.
Well, that's so my concern would be if you were to access the property for some commercial reason, you would have to access it through the Twin Island roads.
Right, and I'd also have to drive over somebody else's property. So because that property, that lot 2700 is landlocked, and I would have to go over somebody else's property in order to get to it. No, my husband says that's not true. So never mind.
Okay, well, that's my concern. And again, initially, obviously, I don't have a problem with the exemption you're looking for. But if the exemption were to be to grandfather some access at a future time, that would be a concern. And you're telling me that, there is, if there was a desire to use that property commercially, you would have to go through a new process, and this would not factor in.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Gonzalez, but that is what would be required, right?
Yes, that is correct. They would have to go through it. And also that parcel has a floodplain on it, so it would likely trigger another form of design, not design review, but development application review. And just to confirm Mrs. Johnson's assumption, yes, the development is all located on 2800, tax lot 2800. Nothing's on 2700. It remains vacant through this land use review process. It'll remain vacant. And yes. So.
Okay, so I think that would satisfy Mr. McAtee's worries. If there was ever any development proposed for 2700 now, they would have to file a whole new application. Okay. Were there any other questions or concerns you had, Mr. McAtee?
No.
Okay. All right, well, great. Well, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that. I think our last person was Ron. And again, Ron, if you'll give us your full name and your address, that would be helpful. I think you're still on mute. Oh, there you go. Thanks.
There we go.
Are we good now?
Yes, now we can hear you.
My name is Ron Niger. And my home address is 8145 Southwest Valley View Drive.
Would you mind spelling your last name for us, Mr. Niger?
N-E-I-G-E-R.
Okay, thank you.
8145 Southwest Valley View Drive, Beaverton, Oregon, 97225.
All right, great. Go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Well, actually, I had the same questions as Al McAtee had, and I had raised my hand earlier, and I didn't know if I could undo it. But, I guess I don't know how to unwave my hand.
That's quite all right.
I have property down there, too, and I'm a neighbor of Al's, and I was a little bit concerned about why 2700 was included in that. I think that was a mistake. I guess that mistake is now being corrected. My only while I'm listening to all of this, I guess I would also add that I don't know what these trucks, how close they are to the crest that borders our property down there at Twin Island. But I would like to know if there's any type of fuel or alcohol, fuel, that's being stored on that property that may leak down into our properties. And I would also like to know if there's any danger of anything falling off the bank and how close the structure is to where the bank goes almost straight down.
Ms. Johnson, you're maybe the best person to respond to that.
Okay. There is no fuel stored on the property. Other than propane that is used in our house, not in the structure, and the building is quite a distance from, I mean, have you ever looked up that hill and seen our house?
No.
No. Okay. So our house sits kind of close to where the bluff starts going down, but the building is probably another 100 to 200 feet,
at least 200 feet
farther back from that edge than our house is. So you're going to see our house coming down the hill a lot sooner than you're going to see that building. We'll be living in the building when the house goes down the hill.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Did that answer your questions, Mr. Tiger?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Just to make sure the other two folks, that we have a Ken and then a phone call, and make sure, raise your hands if you wanted to testify before we move on. Looks like they do not. Ms. Gonzalez, this would be the time for staff to respond to issues. Have come up if you'd like.
It seems like we responded to most of the concerns as we went along. So in addition to that, I think I would be happy to send the PowerPoint or maps to any of the individuals who had concerns regarding the proximity of the structures, etc. But the easement agreement was very clear as to the limitations of what can be done with the commercial vehicles and the size of the vehicles. I think that is all clearly stated in the land use decision and conditions of approval. I was seeing the modification for the development. Yes, anything that is changed other than what we reviewed it as in the application will have to go through a modification of the land use decision. So it wouldn't be something that you will have an opportunity to speak on behalf of your concerns if another land use application comes up. But I think those were primarily the main issues, the clarification of the road easement agreement, restrictions that were applied, which the easement agreement, as I already mentioned, is more restrictive than what our regulations under the home occupation criteria is. So that should resolve a lot of the issues. Any improvements to that roadway needs to be processed through the engineering department, which Mrs. Johnson's already agreed that she's going to go forth and speak to them about just wrapping it up. Sounds like you've already done it, but just wrapping up any loose ends there. And I think that's about it of the notes that I've written down.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Ms. Gonzalez. Ms. Johnson, I think we've taken care of everything, but if you had any final rebuttal you wanted to add, this would be the time. You don't have to if you don't want to.
No rebuttal. What I am curious about is how much longer will the process take?
Well, there haven't been any requests to keep the record open, so what we'll do is we will close the public hearing, we'll close the record, then I would have a final decision out. I'm required to have them out within 3 weeks at the latest. I would anticipate it much sooner than that. My guess is probably sometime next week, certainly the week after that. So, and then you'd be able to move forward with your having the permit. And if you have any questions about the future steps after, once you have an approval, Ms. Gonzalez will probably be able to help you with that, just if you give her a call.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Great.
Well, thank you, everybody. Like I just discussed, what we'll do is we're going to close the public hearing. There haven't been any requests to keep the record open, so we'll close the record. Decision to be out within 3 weeks at the latest, probably sooner. And that'll conclude our proceedings for today. I'd like to thank everybody for being so helpful. Ms. Gonzalez for answering the questions. Ms. Johnson for helping to resolve the issues that came up. And also there were some great questions from Mr. Niger, Mr. McAfee, Mr. Palmer.
I think we lost Fred.
But the timing was good. If he had to be lost, that was a good time to do it, right?
So, yeah, at least he actually closed the...
Yeah. Can I ask you, Lorraine, so after he issues his decision, then is there anything left other than I need to check in with Johnny Gish? And
so the land use decision has a list of conditions of approval. So I would just tick each of one of those off, right? Go through them. I have at least 19 of them. Some of them are basically, as I call, head nods. Of course, you know, I'm going to do that. And they go with the life of the business. Okay. It's not just the one-time thing. It goes through the life of it. I would check with the DEQ just to make sure that the storage of the 50 gallons of the materials is going to be fine. Any other solutions that you have on the property. You do need to talk to the soils department regarding the septic system. You are probably more than likely going to have a letter, authorization letter required. That will take about 4 weeks. So I would get right on that one.
What, why do I need to talk to the soils division?
You have 4 employees, 2 counting yourself. So you have 2 employees on the site.
But they're here. We don't have a restroom out there, and they don't, all they do is pick up the vehicle and leave. Okay. So they don't spend any time here.
Okay. As long as you can say with confidence they do not use your facilities on site.
Absolutely.
Then you won't have to go through that. Okay?
Yeah, okay. So what's left for me to do?
Change of use. For
pardon?
A change of use permit through the building department. So it's a permit that says you are no longer using it at this classification. It's an S classification, and you're going to be, or maybe I've got it reversed, and you'll be using the building to a commercial classification. So you'll go through them for that change of use permit.
And I should wait until the decision is rendered.
I would touch base with them to see about what you need. I would start doing that research because even the research can take a bit of time.
Okay, change of use permit from which division?
Building codes division.
Building codes.
Yeah, department, excuse me. And it is all in the land use decision that you've got a copy, right? Of the land use?
Land use decision.
Uh-huh.
The recommendation.
The recommendation. Thank you.
I don't know that I did.
Oh, okay.
You would spot it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all the additional steps are outlined in that land use
recommendation.
And
then the hearings officer will wrap it up in a final decision because he has the final decision. If we just make the recommendation, he agrees to take in all the conditions of approval or not, but I don't see in any of these conditions of approval where he would not approve them as part of
right.
the land decision. So what I'll do is I'll email you a copy. It sounds like you don't have a copy of it.
I don't think so.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and email that to you so that you quickly have that in your hands and you can start working on it to your earliest convenience.
Okay.
Would you require a permit? You may want to wait for the hearings officer's decision, but at least you'll know the timing and everything else involved.
What permit?
Ask her.
I'm sorry, I missed that. A what permit? I'll need a what?
Change of use.
Change of use, yeah, okay. I thought you said something else.
Oh, okay. I was talking fast. other than that, I think everything else is pretty straightforward. You already have your easement agreement. I'm giving you 45 days from the date of decision to finalize that change of use occupancy. And the purpose for that date is because of the structure's already built. The probability of you doing entirely different plans, that'll be up for the building codes division to tell you if you do or don't. But I'm kind of thinking that you won't be required to, but check with them. They'll have the last word on that. And you're not making enough trips, but still I have a condition for you to talk to Wendy Coriel with the engineering department regarding system development charges for any business. You more than likely don't have the trips that will trigger it, but check with them.
Okay.
And I have all that information in this
record. Okay.
All right. So I think that's pretty much it.
All righty.
All right.
All right. Thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. Folks, take care. I'm glad nothing happened to you on the fires.
Yeah, we're insured. I'm kidding. It's better. Thanks.
All right. You're welcome. All right. Bye, all.
Bye.